Hey guys, my name is Alex, and you're listening to the Thousand Movie Project podcast. One of the timelessly popular Reddit threads that gets resurrected every couple years in some new iteration, but basically suffices, insofar as how it was presented years ago, its title is something like, "What question or topic do you resort to in order to make small talk into mid-talk?" And I admit I do have some general tactics for that. I don't like to reveal the fact that like a few of these things are premeditated and I carry them in my back pocket, that they're not just sort of erupting organically out of my interest in the conversation. But the fact is that sometimes, yeah, you're kind of in a droning social situation. Maybe, well, not maybe, almost certainly it's work-related. Nobody wants to be there. The small talk is really strenuous. And it's not because the people around you are uninteresting or because you are uninterested. It's just some cocktail, some confluence of circumstances that puts you in a mood where you're less tolerant for niceties. You can't quite conjure the energy for that sort of public performance. So here's the question, the foremost question that I go to. What is your intellectual white whale? In other words, what is something that you've always wanted to learn, something that you still plan to learn? It's kind of ambitious, but you are confident enough in the passion that you feel for that topic that you're pretty sure it will buoy you through that long, arduous process. So if someone says to you, their intellectual white whale, something they've been pursuing for a long time, is they want to learn how to speak Italian. And they say, oh, I get 2 weeks deep into Duolingo before falling away, but I'll just have to move to Italy for like 2 or 3 months and then I'm going to absorb it. It seems like a fairly innocuous thing, but it opens the door to other stuff. If somebody tells you that they want to learn Italian, you can ask them why. And if they say that they just like the way that it sounds, you can ask them where they tend to hear it. And if they say in TV and in movies, you can say, oh, do you watch a lot of foreign movies? Where do you find it? How did you first get exposed to them? What are some of the differences between Italian movies and American stuff? That all sounds really, like, probably boring and uphill. My point is just, it opens the door to something more personal. This might be a heady way of putting it, but I feel like if you can get people talking about the stuff that they want to learn, what you're basically getting them to talk about is their priorities and their aspirations, drawing a distinction kind of between the person they are versus the person they want to be. Because I think all of us, when we imagine the day somewhere down the line that we have, you know, already traversed the hurdles and we have applied ourselves to some course of study and we have mastered that particular subject, the person we're imagining is not just like a more knowledgeable version of our current selves. I think we're imagining someone who is, like, patently superior to who we are. Somebody more articulate, maybe. Someone who comes across as more impressive to strangers. Someone with a better job, a little more money, slightly nicer things. I am conquesting one of my own intellectual white whales right now, incidentally. Because I just bought a notebook, which is a statement. And I always lie to myself and say when I'm embarking on some kind of project, like, huh, well, I went out, I spent like $14 on supplies. Done. 10 points for Gryffindor. By the way, a colleague pointed out to me, she saw that my birthday was on the calendar in the break room, and she was like, oh, you're a Taurus, huh? And I was like, yeah. And she goes, yeah, I already knew that. And I go, how did you know that? And she goes, because you're a Ravenclaw. So I bought this notebook, and I have so far filled nearly 20 pages of it with research, because over the next few weeks, I intend to learn the shit out of Nike products. Oh, that's interesting. Why Nike products?
Do you wear Nike products?
Are you more interested in the quality of their products or the culture behind their brand? Glad you asked those questions, and I'm happy to elaborate. As you might know, if you've been listening to the podcast lately, I work at a grocery store. Try to mention this 2 or 3 times each episode, partly because I want you to have some context of where I'm coming from, and partly because I'm still trying to wrap my head around the fact that I work at a grocery store. A 2021 study interviewing married couples who were born in the 1990s, so people who are now in their early 20s to their early 30s, they were having 50% less sex than Gen X was having in their early 20s and early 30s. And since the grocery store doesn't cover all of our bases financially, I earn a little extra money by flipping clothes and books on eBay. And since Nike is probably the most ubiquitous brand out there, I figure the best way of learning to identify the good stuff is not to try and like cherry pick the learning process, try to focus only on what sells and then go, you know, hunting, sniping for those particular things. I've tried that before in a few different categories, and I don't think that it works. This is one of the hard realities of getting an education, is that when you're studying a subject, you don't know which information is useful and which is not until you've learned it and tried to apply it, which means that you have to spend a lot of time and resources learning about shit that isn't going to be useful. I need you to hold me accountable for this. If you see me in public, ask me a Nike question. I won't know the answer, but I'll make something up, and then I'm going to feel bad about it. And while I'm feeling bad about it, you can challenge me about the fact that I just made something up. I will double down and get defensive and lash out, and I'll be like, what am I supposed to be? Why you ask me that question? What am I, the fucking mayor of Nike? And then we can walk away from each other on bad terms. This is going to be great. We're going to enjoy this. I'm going to take you on this journey. But that thing about young people and marriages having way less sex than would appear to make sense, that was the subject of a really long piece in the New York Times from this past week, which was basically a portrait of several different marriages. It was fascinating. It was genuinely insightful. But whenever I'm reading stories like this, like every now and then, the city of New York steps into the story almost like a character and ends up changing my understanding of the material. Like there's one portrait of a married couple. The woman gave birth a couple years ago and there were complications. It was really painful, and consequently she feels that her sex drive is not zapped, but she's reluctant to sort of indulge it because she's afraid that the sex is gonna hurt or she's gonna feel uncomfortable physically and emotionally. And so she and her husband have this routine for dealing with their respective needs. In the mornings, while he is taking the kid to school or daycare or whatever it is, she stays at home and masturbates. She says she's still sort of getting in touch with her body again, figuring out what she likes, how she likes to do it, and she doesn't want to sort of drag him through that touch and go experience. And then at night, while she is handling some other aspect of the household, he goes into the bathroom and watches porn on his phone and masturbates. And that doesn't sound great, but kudos if it works. And just as you're sort of acclimating to this reality that they've created in their marriage, suddenly the writer mentions casually, which I guess we should have presumed given where we're reading this, they live in a one-bedroom New York City apartment with their child. Okay, well, that is a huge part of this portrait. Tight space, they're constantly on top of each other performing chores. There's a kid in the living room who can hear everything they're doing, probably. Neither one of them probably has a single moment of privacy except when they're in the bathroom masturbating to their phone. I think the problem with this marriage is New York City. But what do I know about making a marriage work? And who am I to suggest that New York is a problem for any of these people? I'll admit that I don't really like New York City that much. I don't really understand the allure, apart from the busyness and the trendiness and whatever. I just don't get why people would choose to live in a place that is systematically just squeezing you out, becoming more and more expensive, making you thriftier and thriftier and more desperate and irritable, until there's almost no space to breathe or to be alone with yourself, and instead, the only way you can get sexual satisfaction is by masturbating while your partner is taking your kid to school or sneaking off into the bathroom with your cell phone. But anyways, I don't totally understand it. I admit I probably have a lopsided understanding of this, but I do suspect that someday, if given the time and the resources and the chance, I could bring myself to learn.